Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It's a terrible fight, and it's between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It's full of anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, resentment, inferiority. It lies, has false pride, superiority, and ego." He continued, "The other wolf is good. He is joy. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." And the grandson, he sat there, thought about it for a minute. And he asked the grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the one you feed." Yeah.
Lord, it's so hard living this life, a constant struggle. But I won't accept that this is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. 'Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me? I wanna be free, totally free. I'm not gonna.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. You know, it all just depends on what part of the world you're listening. Welcome. ¿Qué tal? Bienvenidos. Namaste. Oki, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of your hosting duties, holding down the other half, my best friend, the Lions historian, my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O?
Hey, man. How you doing? I messed around and poked around in the studio, and I messed up. I knocked some things off and can't find some other things. So I'm flying blind a little bit, but that's all right. You know, you're the man. I'm, you know, how's it going? I'm I'm doing all right. How you doing?
Good, good. I'm good. You got some interlude music playing in the background there?
You know what? Wait, hold on a second.
You were in the midst of a mid breath work session before the show.
I must have meditated
before I work with my son. Let me get my mind right.
You know, yeah, can't get right.
No, that's me.
Let me get out of the way so you can do the preliminaries, man.
But yeah, I'm good. Yeah, so we'll jump right into it here. So, it's Monday. We do our live shows. For those that are listening to the recorded show, we broadcasting live Mondays and Wednesdays now for 1 hour. So for those that are listening right now, as we begin every show, we'd like to remind everybody just a few things. The first one is to grab your pen and pad, your pencil and paper, post-it note, envelope, whatever you got. We want to make sure that if you have any questions, you won't forget them. Any comments, maybe you might even pick up something from us, or you might have something you want to share. We want to make sure that, you know, you don't forget it, because sometimes we might get caught up in some discussions here on the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. You know the phrase, why use 100 words when 1,000 will do? But it doesn't mean we don't love you. We're not thinking about you. So we don't want you to forget your stuff, too. So grab your pen and pad. The second thing is we have a chat room that is online during our live broadcast. Right now we still are broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio. So you can access the chat room with your Blog Talk Radio account. If you are on the site, and if you scroll down to the bottom of the broadcast, you will see a link asking you to sign in to access the chat room. And you can do so with a Blog Talk Radio account that you can set up for free. And as Dad always points out, we've never heard anybody getting robbed or took or bamboozled, you know, signing up for a free account.
That's right.
You know, so, you know, we really enjoy
it. That's
always the first. No, they're not going to do that. You're not going to do that.
Right on, man.
Let me be the first, you know. Blame Will.
There you go, my man.
But,
see, that's why he's so used. That's why he's caller friendly.
Caller friendly.
He's always thinking about your house's best interest. Yeah.
I want to be the voice of the people. Give them an opportunity.
Okay.
where am I here? Oh, the chat room. The chat room. Right. So, again, we enjoyed this opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, as you can, you know, see. And if you've heard our shows before, you know, we have some really fun moments here. But we also like to engage with you, the listeners, our family, friends. You can, again, engage in the chat room, or you can call us directly. Phone lines are open at area code 516-453-6094. I'm sure you had a pen and paper handy, but just in case, I'll give it to you again. That's 516-453-6094. And if you press 1 in the keypad, that'll activate your number in our queue, and we can bring you in. And if you change your mind, want to get out, just press 1 again. That will deactivate the number. Because otherwise, we'll bring you in.
Right. So you can deactivate, but to get out, you don't have to hang up.
Right, don't hang up.
Sometimes folks are like, they panicked. I don't want them calling on me to hang up, man. So, absolutely.
Either that or they got mad and hung up.
Well, that happens too. That's why it's a good thing I'm your wingman. You know, but I'm learning from you, man. I'm learning from you. It's just a work in process. Give me time. I'll get there.
Absolutely, both of us. But that's the fun part about doing the show and sharing it with everybody. You know, work in progress, but it's good progress. You know. But
yeah,
twice a week now, ladies and gentlemen, and only for 1 hour. So we're looking forward to doing these type of shows now. And it helps us to kind of, you know, get right into things. And you won't feel, well, anyway, we're excited about it. 1 hour, Mondays and Wednesdays live. And, of course, our shows are archived, and distributed on your favorite listening platforms. Sorry about that. My glasses just fell apart on me. Wednesday, we got into some discussion about art and artistry. You know, I took some time in talking about artistry and its definition, you know, such, you know, like dance and music, roller skating, bowling, like there's an artistry to the things that we do, these creative moments. But even like this show, what I feel, in my opinion, this show is like art also, and provides an opportunity to exercise critical thinking and experience even a renewed self-awareness and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience. You know, that's one reason why we ask you guys to call in sometimes, you know, and share some of your interpretations and feelings, you know? You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Beautiful.
But like art, it's influential. You know, it's influential in a lot of things. And Wednesday, we kind of went into a little further depth about its influence. I gave some examples talking about Prince and music and movies, and even with movies and soundtracks, you know, and all these things. But, you know, we still, you know, Dad, it's like we're still living in this world where we really don't, you know, people of color, Black Americans, we really don't see ourselves represented as much as we should be, you know, I think in like TV and movies and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, recently we had Black Panther on TV. You know, you got, Blackish, you know, Black Lightning, you know, but
well, we don't keep time. Yeah.
You know, but there's still this need, you know, there's still this thing that Hollywood, if you will, doesn't really tell our story, you know, or properly. And I know last week that you, from your point of view, from you growing up, you were going to talk about various movies and their impact on you. So I didn't want to spend, you know, too much time in the intro. I wanted to kind of get into it, and I wanted to see what you wanted to share last week and hear your thoughts on the influence and how it's affected you.
Well, you know, I just wanted to back up to a comment you made and stating the point, you know, which is a very valid point. You used Black Panther, you know, which I don't know. I guess Black Panther is the Jackie Robinson of Hollywood movies for Black people. You know, it's like that's the constant reference, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not too sure. I'm still thinking we're missing the point. You know, there's a lot to be said about what you are referring to in regards to representation. Black Panther is not a real movie. I mean, it's not based on a real character. You know, it's a cartoon, you know, and of course it's brought to life on the screen. But I think the bigger point is we, meaning Black folk and the rest of America as well, you know, we've gotten conditioned, I'll use that word, to think of what we see constantly as being the norm. What I mean is, so all the superheroes are white. So that's what we're used to. That's what we're conditioned for. So, whether it's the Falcon or, you know, whether it's my man Don Cheadle playing next to Iron Man, or whether it's the Black Panther himself as the character, not the actor. You know, it's like we see it as an oddity, as a nuance even. But I'm thinking how it should be seen is an insult. You know, why is it that we have to think of all of what we hold value in our society as accepting the visual white representation? Why does Thor have to be white with blonde hair? You know, And of course, Loki, dark hair. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, but still white. But yet and still, you know, like Superman. I mean, Krypton. There no black people on Krypton. I guess not. Doesn't matter. It got blown to smithereens anyway, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, like, yeah, we had Uhura in Star Trek, you know, but, you know, all of the places they went to in all the galaxies they visited, there was never one planet that they went to that was black. You know, what does that say about, you know, where we are in the eyes of, like, Gene Roddenberry and all these other visionaries? You know, why, you know, it's the older I get, the more I'm offended by what I see and how it readily is accepted as being the norm. You know, it's always, and I apologize, man, I know I've gone off script, but it was just something that just nudged me maybe in the wrong direction when you mentioned, and this isn't about you, it's, you know, this constant reference to Black Panther as if, you know, as if it's a major step towards civil rights. You know, really? And, well, before I, you know, go on completely off the rail, anyway, let me just try to stay as focused as I can. All of, you know, in America, the only country in the world, I think, that's really so colorphobic, you know, other countries are, the residents are, you know, now they may have racism in other countries, like New England, or they may have racism in China, but, you know, in China, everybody's Chinese, you know, in Britain, everybody's British. You know, in America, we deal with these color barriers and definitions and typecast roles. And if you aren't white, then you are a member of a, you know, like a subhuman culture called minority. This only exists in America, you know, and this concept minority, it's something, again, we've gotten so conditioned toward using that we even use it to describe ourselves. I'm a member of a minority race. Well, you know, that's this functional schizophrenic attitude that we deal with constantly in a country that's so colorphobic as America, that a movie that comes along like the Black Panther just raises the eyebrows, you know, of the greater society, you know, greater meaning the so-called majority, you know, of, wow, this is so quaint, you know, this is so cool. Yeah, but unfortunately, it's just a movie that doesn't have a long-range impact. So people go to see it out of curiosity, but real quick, return to their neutral corners, you know, and the attitudes of separation continue to thrive. And it I don't know, maybe I've just gotten, you know, I've become that old man that sits on his front porch with the white hair that screams at the kids going by, stay off my lawn. You know, so I guess that's just what I've become, you know, and that's my attitude, you know, yeah. Stay off my lawn is attitude toward the things that I just can't see them through the same eyes. I had a chance, yeah, just, you know, a random chance to watch a movie that I saw 100,000 times as a teenager, and as did all of my friends, you know. But we lived in that era of cowboys and Indians, and we lived in that era of, you know, gangsters and cops and robbers.
Yeah.
So, you know, we lived in that time where the values of American society were not so much defined by color as much as they were defined by cultural orientation. Like, gangsters were cool when we were teenagers. We didn't think anything about, you know, the Mafia or the Godfather or any of those movies we saw in the 70s and 80s and how they depicted, you know, these organized gangs selling drugs to the black community. We were totally oblivious to that when we were watching The Untouchables, you know, the TV series. Yeah, but all the good guys were white. All the bad guys were, you know, they were white. They sometimes, you know, had accents that suggested they were like of a different part of the world. But no, nobody black ever showed up one way or the other. So I watched this movie last weekend called They Died With Their Boots On. And like I said, I've seen that movie a million times. Well, all of a sudden, I just increased. I said 100,000 when I started out. Now it's moved up to 1 million already. Yeah, you know, I've seen it 1 million times, you know, as a teenager. And it was about, in essence, it was about George Armstrong Custer. You know, Custer's last band, mm-hmm. the Little Bighorn, the Indian Massacre. You know, I mean, all of what the cavalry did to the Indians were called great victories. And what the Indians did to Custer and his boys was called a massacre, you know, and it's just kind of how America does it, I guess. But this is what the America I was raised in. So I never questioned the authenticity of the story of the guy I'm looking at. You know, I didn't weigh his character, his attitudes, his beliefs, his feelings about Native Americans or the indigenous cultures, or what we called Indians when I was growing up, took it as face value what I saw on the screen, as all of those who I grew up with did. We just accepted what we were seeing as valid, as heroic, you know, as something that was to instill in us the idea of glory and courage. But still, we had to look at it through, you know, a rose-colored lens that never depicted us by color. What we saw in movies like that and some of my other favorite movies were always black folks depicted as some kind of caricature of themselves. The maid, I think it was Hattie McDaniel, I'm not sure who it was, but the maid in They Die With Their Boots On, to Custer's wife, you know, she was always the good mammy, you know, more concerned about, you know, the well-being of Custer's wife and Custer and hooking them up and all that than she was about her own life. You know, she had no life. Her life was to attend to, you know, those who she served, attention to that as a kid. And I don't know why, consciously anyway, I just got moved to, I mean, I already knew things or things that were suggested in other movies like Little Big Man and so many other movies that suggested Custer wasn't this blonde-haired hero that They Died With Their Boots On depicting him to be. So I just knew enough about his background to know that he wasn't this heroic figure, but I wanted to see what history had to say about him compared to what the movies said about him. And that's my point, if there's any point I'm trying to make. In reviewing him historically and then reviewing him the way he was depicted on the screen, there's a constant motif, a constant theme that I find the movies or Hollywood depicts. They use just enough fact to the fiction. You know, so you get just enough so that gives the fictitious character depicted on the screen some validity. But of course, if you do the great affront that American society frowns on, which is to read history, which is to read, period, then cracks start showing in the portrait. You know, it wasn't that Custer hated Indians. Indians were just what they were. They were just something that he saw. If he took on the task at hand, the more Indians he killed in battle or slaughtered by raiding villages or whatever, the more glory he would get and the more status he would get and the more stature he'd get and the more political clout he would get. So he just saw Indians as an ends to a means. He had no feeling about them one way or the other. Although at one point he did make, you know, he did take a stand about the corruption of American politics and government toward Indians' rights of claims, you know. So he, in one point, did, I guess you could say, support their plight, but that only lasted as long as the next opportunity he had to return to the forefront of American society. And it's like, well, you know, Indians, you know, you know, if they knew what they were doing, they would have done something with what they had. So, of course, we have to come in and do something with the land because they're not doing anything. Well, no, because the land was taking care of itself. You know, if we had lived by the code of the Native American, we wouldn't have electricity bills. We wouldn't have air pollution. We wouldn't have, you know, and you remember the crying Indian in those commercials who looked upon his rivers
yeah.
and saw all this pollution, right?
Pollution, yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, I mean, all of that, you know, is what we call progress, what American society calls progress. So a movie that just kind of sparked me to pursue other things and reactivate some old things, because this isn't anything new that we're talking about. We've talked about this particular theme in other shows. You know, we talked about certain movies. We talked about the historical reference of certain movies. I think we tapped on Just Mercy. We mm-hmm. tapped on Malcolm X. We tapped on, you know, a few of the themes of the big movies that we've seen at the big show, you know, and we talked about the stars of these movies. So it's not like we haven't touched on it before. But the thing, though, that got me was they die with their boots on, reinstilled in me an old issue, you know, that continues to, you know, become more and more a concern of mine the older I get, because I don't see the imagery of Black America being depicted in history as it should have been by now.
Yeah, by now.
And I can't pretend, you know, and I can't pretend I'm not seeing that. I can't turn it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of because it's not a conversation that anybody has, you know, and so it's not it's almost an annoyance even to bring it up, so I don't even bring it up. But then I have to wonder how many others don't bring it up, since it seems to be such an annoyance. Like, well, you know, why are you talking about that? We, you know, progress is slow but steady, and we're, you know, so much in a better place than we were before. Well, that's not true. I mean, all you got to do is look at the political structure of Texas to know it isn't true. Texas has found loopholes in the way to once again return itself back to Jim Crow laws, and suddenly, you know, gerrymandering has become a justified way to rig elections. You know, I mean, Trump campaigned here after he lost about how different states were robbing him, and he even came to Texas and demanded a recount. He won Texas. He won Texas like 3-1. So why is, you know, but it's not the point of accuracy that he's looking to stir up. It's the point of fear, you know, that he wants to continue to tout. And so I see what the theme is. American society would have to admit to its wrongs since its existence in order to right that wrong and begin to teach a corrected history that would place Black people and other people of color, you know, into their proper status in this society. But that means everything just about would have to be redone, including Hollywood. And I guess that's just not a cost-effective thing. So let's instead just give people a little bit of this, a little bit of that, just to shut them up. So we'll give them Hidden Figures. We'll give them Harriet. You know, we're going to tone down the slave movies, thank God. And we're going to give the hero movies, you know. And we'll even throw in a cartoon or two. You know, but we're not going to be changing too much. So y'all get the... You get the most out of this drop of rain that you can, but don't be looking for no flood. And
right.
So here we are. So anyway, man, and just looking at and going through these themes, it made me reflect on, it caused me, didn't make me, it caused me to reflect on a couple movies I saw growing up. One of them was, and why is that important? Because these movies helped shape my life as an American, as a male, and as a so-called member of a minority race. And, you know, I hate that word. I just don't see how minority has a place in a democratic society. But anyway, in 1946, there was a movie called The Song of the South. You know, and it's a Disney movie. But it's a movie, part cartoon. So the movie part of it was Uncle Remus, and Uncle Remus spun these tales. And these tales were actually several books written by the author, Joel Chandler Harris. And believe it or not, I kept telling myself I was going to look up Joel, J-O-E-L, Chandler Harris, to find out what his nationality was. And, you know, I just never got around to seeing if this dude was white or black or what was his makeup. So Joel Chandler Harris wrote these series of books, and the character was pretty much who Uncle Remus was represented in this movie, The Song of the South. Now, I saw it as a youngster. I mean, I don't even think I hit double digits. I think I probably saw it when I was about maybe 8 or 9. And so I just remember Uncle Remus, you know, he had this song, you know, and it had to do with, you know, Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. Is it true? It's not. Everything is satisfactory. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day. So, you know, Uncle Remus was an Uncle Tom-looking, Uncle Ben-looking kind of dude.
You gave us the short version.
Yeah.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the cartoon characters like Br'er Rabbit, you know, and Br'er Fox. And Br'er Rabbit was like this real slick dude who always found a way to get out of the traps of the fox or whatever. But it was this little boy, little Johnny, who was, he wasn't a cartoon character. He was like an Uncle Remus character. He was a human being, you know. And little Johnny was excited about going to visit his grandmother who lived in a plantation in the Deep South. Of course, Uncle Remus lived in that same plantation. So, you know, the little Johnny, of course, got into Uncle Remus's stories and all that. And the cartoons were brought to life on the screen. And that's what I remembered as a kid. I remembered the cartoon characters. I remembered, you know, the fun it was to see that movie. You know, that's what I remembered. Man, back in my wild years. Oh, you remember June, because you remember you took me and June and her daughter to see Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, anyway, me and June decided we wanted to take her daughter to see The Song of the South because she had kind of the same memories I did. Hey, it's a good movie to go see with cartoon characters. It's fun. Uncle Remus tells great stories. Man, we went to the Beverly Theater, 95th Street. And, bruh, if there was a lower place to get in the chair while I was sitting in the movie theater, I found it. You know, it was the most embarrassing moment of my life, sitting through a movie that was, like, all about this grown man being reduced to this boy status and how the plantation just ran gunshot over him and how, you know, he was this Uncle Tom figure who had no recourse but just to, you know, be led by the beck and call of the plantation, you know, but always with this conversation of a glimmer of hope in the future, you know, for his people or whatever the case may be. But it was the most embarrassing hour and a half or so I ever spent in my life. And at one point I looked over at June and she was lower in the seat than I was. And of course the daughter was sitting there watching, eating popcorn and loving it, you know? And it's like, it was demeaning. It was humiliating, but it was also full of white people. You know, I don't think we didn't recall seeing another, and we were kind of relieved that we didn't see any other black folks in the theater coming out because we're not sure how we would have reacted to it. You know, it was that embarrassing. But anyway, and if you remember where the Beverly was, you know that back then it wouldn't be that unusual to know that the movie theater was, you know, was predominantly white.
Yeah, Beverly.
And then came another movie called The Learning Tree. It was done by Gordon Parks Jr. Gordon Parks Jr., a dude who I should know because history has talked about, but of course I don't know because history hasn't. And The Learning Tree had to do with two boys, Newton Marcus, you know, who grew up in a racist town in 1920s Kansas, you know, coexisting with white neighbors in the white population, most of whom were inherent racist, meaning they didn't know any other way to be but racist. They didn't even think, and I think about America today, I don't think most people who are called racist think of themselves as being racist because they don't know any other way to think. It's not like they're having a choice between what's fair and unfair. They're just choosing a way of life that is most familiar. And that way of life is a way that's been taught. So I come along and say, you're racist, and they look at me like I'm crazy because they're just being who they are. They don't have any issue with black people after all, you know. They root for LeBron James and spend money to go out and root for their favorite football players and all that. So, you know, so how could they be racist if they love black athletes? So anyway, the theme of the movie, The Learning Tree, now, it came out in 69. So I was like 20, a little, maybe 21. I think me and your mom went to see it. And it was the most amazing thing to watch in that I had never seen a movie about two black boys growing up. One, you know, from a not affluent, but a relatively comfortable family lifestyle. And the other, you know, the other black boy, of course, grew up and he had an alcoholic, abusive father who was a widower, you know, so, but they were friends. And rather than get into I need to see the movie again, I know that, but rather than get into the whole plot of the movie, the thing that unfolded before me that I remember more than anything else was this love story. He had this crush on this older black female. He was probably maybe like 16, and she was in her late 20s probably, you know, which, of course, you know, I could relate to right away. But anyway, you know, that's another story for another time. The point being that I had never seen a movie like that before, you know, and it was stunning. And Gordon Parks Jr. is a well-known photographer who made his mark with this particular movie. It was just something to watch in contrast to the type of distorted viewpoint I had of myself for so many years through the movies I saw. That spun me out. You know, that spun me out to think more in detail about how the movies had affected my life over a stretch of time, you know, and the stretch of time being, you know, my formative years on up through the late 20s, early 30s. That was probably the most chaotic time of my life up to about 33, 34. So there were several movies, and just to sling the titles out, and I'm not going to get into all the details. I've probably taken give me just about 3 more minutes. Having had the experience of that they die with their boots on, and of course talking about The Learning Tree, caused me a moment to just reflect on what were the movies that impact, you know, in my life growing up. I'm not talking about the movies of frustration and anger. I'm just talking about the movies of art, as you put it, the artistry of movies. It just reflected a theme that was new to me and I found reassuring to some degree. Yeah, some of them were confusing, but that's okay. That's only because I wasn't familiar with the artistry. Like going to see a musical when you're 11, yeah, and it's a black, Porgy and Bess is the one that comes to mind, you know, and that starred, and a great cast, right? Sidney Poitier and Dorothy Dandridge and Sammy Davis Jr. But it was a black musical. You know, that was my first black musical. My second was West Side Story. But my first, it's like, well, I wasn't there to see no musical. I didn't know what a musical was. It's like, when's the action going to start? So I missed the whole point of the movie. But it was this one dude in the movie, Sidney Poitier, man. And that's what did it for me. Suddenly, I saw what I had never experienced before. A black hero movie star, at least to me movie star, because he was something not like what I was used to seeing. You know, and then this dude did this movie after Porgy and Bess called The Defiant Ones, you know, and it was about him and Tony Curtis, and they were chained together, escaped convicts. And an incredible movie that, you know, I think Tony Curtis either was nominated for supporting actor. I don't know, maybe Sidney was too. All I know is that it was just an amazing thing to watch. And the next one I saw, you know, now, you know, this cat's got my nose, man. So I saw All the Young Men, and it was about this platoon leader, you know, who was thrust, actually he was a sergeant in this outfit. He was the only black dude in this outfit, and the platoon leader was killed, and he was put in charge of the platoon. And of course, everybody was, you know, what I would call racist, and you know, he fought his way through that and eventually earned their respect without dying. That's what I loved about it. You know, he won their respect without dying.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, this dude got something to offer me, man. Let me check this cat out. And then came, and this is where I'll stop because, you know, there's too many to go through. I'm realizing it, and we're on a different schedule now. So let me just hit on this last one. Well, let me back up because there were two other movies that Sidney was in. You know, one was called The Red Ball Express. Why is that important? It was about an Army supply truck. It was about the Army supply truckers that 75% were black, and it was a true story, The Red Ball Express. And it was about these truckers who was the constant flow of supplies to the front in Europe, you know, to all the battling Army battalions. You know, the Red Ball Express was their own, there was like their lifeline. These dudes supplied, you know, whatever they needed, ammunition, medical supplies, food, you know. And Sidney Poitier was, he was not a star in that movie, but he was sure enough a member of that movie. And I'm watching the movie thinking, it's just entertainment. Again, because, you know, black folks didn't do anything but slave for a living. We had no history. So I'm just watching this movie and thinking, oh, how entertaining. But then another one came along after that, man. And I think this is what did it for my man Sid. You know, it was Blackboard Jungle. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. It came out in 55. And it had to do with, it would be right up your alley because it was out of the classroom, you know. Sidney Poitier and Vic Morrow, you know, they were classmates, but Vic Morrow was a gang leader, and Sidney was just a brother on a hustle, you know, and everybody respected him, but he wasn't looking for respect. He was just a brother on a hustle. And this movie had a great soundtrack it was the first movie to have a rock and roll soundtrack attached to it. You know, before then it was all orchestration. So anyway, but the last one I want to talk about, then I'm going to get out of the way. I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to. I guess I got a little bit kind of excited more than I thought I would. But the last one I just want to touch on was A Raisin in the Sun. That came out in 61. Why that means so much to me, because 61, the movie was filmed in Chicago. Yeah, it was based in Chicago. Of course, they probably at other places that they did some hits too, but it was called the Kit Kat Club. Was on 63rd and St. Lawrence, and a lot of the scenes were shot right out of that. Now, of course, we were teenagers, so you know, lounge life hadn't reached me yet. That came later. But it was this hotel on the south side of Chicago, the Evans Hotel. I was familiar with the Evans Hotel because I had a paper route, and my paper route was Evans Avenue. You know, and Evans Hotel, you know, I met some interesting characters. Most black entertainers and athletes stayed at the Evans Hotel. None could get hotels downtown. So if the Midland Hotel was full, then the Evans Hotel is where they would stay. So I met the Harlem Globetrotters. I mean, I didn't meet them personally. I mean, I, you know, saw and waved at them and all that. Walt Bellamy called the bell in the NBA, you know. I gave him a newspaper. He wanted to pay for it, man. I never seen anybody that tall before. He scared the hell out of me. I'm like, yeah, man, just take it. Don't beat me up. You know, but the crown jewel, you know, for me was word spread that Sidney Poitier was sitting in the lobby of the Evans Hotel. And me and my homies, man, we flocked to there. And we flocked to the hotel. And they had this big picture window. And he was sitting at a table with this white dude, probably his agent, but it might have been the producer of the movie. Who knows? But he was sitting eating. And we just stood there. We didn't stand there licking our lips like we wanted his food. We were like smiling, waving our hands at him, you know, cheering. And the dude got up, man, came outside and shook every one of our hands. Well, I'm assuming. All I know is that he shook mine, you know. So, you know, everybody said he shook their hands, too. I know he shook mine, man. And
yeah, that's what matters.
That was it for me. You know, actually touched hands. You know, with a silver screen hero, man. And Sidney has been a a real part of my life ever since. So maybe Wednesday I can talk a little bit more about his influence and other movies he was in, and also how I feel that he was, you know, really how Hollywood treated him with great disrespect. I don't care nothing about him getting that honorary, you know, award that they gave him. I think he just lived longer than they expected him to. They had to do something, you know, and I'm glad they did give it to him before he died. But that man should have had at least 6 Academy Awards. But anyway, man, thank you for letting me just talk a little bit about that. And so the influence in itself just rests on the fact that much of my attitude and beliefs and shifted imagery within myself was influenced by, you know, the movies, both positive and negative. And, you know, a black actor like Sidney Poitier just had such an incredible impact on my life, you know, as a whole, even to this day.
Yeah.
So that's it, man. Thank you for letting me just breeze through that. I didn't really breeze through it. I just took all the show.
I'm glad you touched on Sidney Poitier. And I think,
but if we have a chance, I'd like to do a part 2 Wednesday if possible. Go ahead.
I was just thinking the impact Sidney Poitier back then for you was probably, you know, similar to that Black Panther thing. And the reason why we bring it up so much,
I think
because it's, you know, the most recent, you know, even though we had Wesley as Blade and Michael White with Spawn, you know, they weren't really the hero, you know.
No,
they were,
man,
like anti-hero.
How insulting, right? Yeah, man.
You know,
Spawn, you know, he was like a devil dude, right? I mean, didn't he?
But he was still a good guy.
But
he ended up doing good things. But, you know.
And Blade was like Dracula, right?
Speaking of Dracula, you know, talking about influential, I had a chance to meet William Marshall.
Wow, my man, Blackula.
Blackula.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that, man.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Wow.
I don't remember when. It could have been at McDade.
Yeah.
It could have been on a field trip. Mm-hmm. But it was during the time when I was attending McDade. You know, so between,
man,
you know, up to fifth grade, somewhere around there, I had a chance to meet him. And that was really influential, you know, because,
heck yeah,
you know, you consider his background, you know,
opera
singer, theater, Shakespearean actor.
Yeah. Yeah. Shakespearean actor, man. He had that voice too.
He had that real, deep. I can't even do it, man.
Yeah.
He had that real deep voice.
No, man. No, it would take Melvin Franklin from the Temptations to hear his voice.
and those that are listening and not familiar with William Marshall, look him up. I mean, you all probably know Blackula. As soon as we say Blackula, that old school Dracula blaxploitation.
Yeah.
You know.
Blaxploitation, right?
Blaxploitation. That's a whole nother subject right there to talk about, you know.
Sure is. Yeah. It's a whole show, right, man?
You
easily.
Know,
yeah.
I don't even like using the term blaxploitation. That's kind of like how minority is, you know, and I get it. I understand the concept and how it came
but
about.
But I feel where you're coming from with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, it really, I think it was, you know, it was monumental, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and the opportunity for Black America to express themselves.
But absolutely.
Again, that's a whole nother topic.
William Marshall, man, I had no idea
William
you
Marshall,
met him, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it was meeting him, you know, like, wow. You know, it wasn't like he was just some jive-talking dude. I mean, he was,
mm-hmm.
like, speaking the propers of the proper, you know. And
This black man looking like this, speaking like that.
And, you know, even though he was in this movie, you know, it's like, wow. You know, and it's, you know, anything's possible. You mentioned Gordon Parks, you know, artistry.
Yeah.
Artistry wise,
right.
man, that you know,
right.
influential. Wow, you know, very influential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you had me. You had me chuckling. I'm just looking over some notes here. I was writing down while you were talking, and you were talking about the one movie, and I missed the name of it, where the guy didn't die at the end. But what's interesting is that
Sidney
we still,
Poirier, and all the young men,
And even to this day, we still joke about that. Oh wow, a movie where the black person didn't die at the end, and then you get like Magnificent Seven, where multiple people of color didn't die at the end. You know.
The remake. Just real quick to give folks an understanding of what you're saying. These seven guys, these heroes, right, who saved this town. You know, four of them was white, and three of them were men of color. And Denzel was the leader, right? And Denzel, the Indian, and the Mexican lived, and the poor white dude died. I mean, that just blew me away. I'm sorry, man. Go ahead. That was all movie like that.
But, you know, it's what's interesting, I think, for us to talk about it, you know, you think about these moments, you know, when you have this first time somebody, you know, with a black person lives, this first time you see a movie where he's the hero and he saves America, or he saves these people. We look at that first time when it's a superhero and not just some Caucasian guy, you know, that can do it all day, you know. I think maybe, you know, perhaps a challenge would be to stop for a minute, and whatever nationality or whatever color, you know, but when you see these moments on movies or TV, I think we should really stop for a moment and like, wow, you know, why is that affecting me? Why, you know, because sometimes we just laugh it off and we just keep going, which is cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not knocking it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can, and you know, you don't need to get deep. I know you might be, you know, with the people and having a good time, and no need to be a Will Killjoy or anything like that and get into deep conversation and no one wants to get into it.
Right.
But seriously, I think that there should be some moments where we catch ourselves like, man, you know, why am I still surprised to see this? Why am I still surprised to see these firsts that are happening?
Yeah. Right on, man. I'm in total agreement with you, man. I'm in total agreement with you, and I agree with you also that just talking about and giving a different perspective, I think, would automatically happen in just talking about, you know, the influence of black themed movies or black actors on us, you know, as black men. I think that in itself would be a show. You know, and I don't think that's something that is talked about in the rank and file of those media outlets that have such a far-reaching impact on the greater American society. It just isn't everyday conversation like everyday conversation is. You know, we're not a part of everyday conversation as we should be. Instead, we're parentheses, we're footnotes, we're sensationalism. You know, it's not everyday dialogue like it should be, like it should be consistent with the way white history does with white people. History, American history, should be doing the same thing with black people. You know, this is supposed to be a constant flow of dialogue that shouldn't be separated by color other than to make a point of how well blended we are. Well, that ain't happening. You know, that ain't nothing but the hype that is sold some other place. You know, it ain't happening here.
Because then that takes us all the way back to points that you made in earlier shows, you begin to take off those masks and those veils and really truly see what true history is and what true white American history is. And, you know, those things that you sprinkle a little truth, but add some extra false stories to it, like you said earlier. You know, you're not going to have not too many stories where it's just all true.
Mm-hmm.
But then it seems like sometimes when there is those moments of full truth, there really isn't a lot of discussion, or maybe I'm missing it. I don't know.
It depends, I believe, if I'm following you, on what the movie is depicting. If it's depicting a consistency in how American society has revealed itself, then it's like, you know, it's given an Academy Award, you know. But if it's something that is off the beaten path that starts, you know, challenging the consciousness of white America, then the whole point of it gets lost in the controversy. And unfortunately, it's not just the actors, but it's, you know, the people who can identify with those actors of color. We pay the greater price because the controversy takes away from the special recognition. You know, it's like, oh, there must be something wrong here, or there's something that isn't quite consistent here, or there's something that's a problem. So suddenly that becomes the debate instead of the thrill. And that was, I think I have to agree with you in regards to the Black Panther. You know, that was, you know, that was universally a great celebration, something that I think caught everybody off guard. It's kind of like when Jerry Krause drafted Michael Jordan. He didn't know what he had, you know? But he sure claimed all the benefits of it. You know, he didn't know what he had, man, you know. And I think that, you know, Black Panther just captured the imagination of American society because that part of imagination had never been touched before without controversy. Yeah, so I feel you there, man. Yeah, Black Panther, you know, had a tremendous impact on American society and a whole, actually, even, you know, a cartoon character kind of gave America a little bit of pride, you know.
It did. Yeah. I mean, it was, yeah. It's you know, similar to Sidney Poitier, similar to Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm feeling you, man.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, a black person can be president. Oh, a black person can be a main star, you know. But,
yeah,
you know, it's the influence. Artistry has its influence. Yeah, go ahead.
I know we're at the end. But just real quick, I didn't see at the movie theater, I didn't see the Endgame or whatever the last of those Marvel superhero movies were with the gang of heroes fighting, you know, this dude, whatever his name was. I think the Endgame was the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that at the movie theater. So I saw it, you know, here, you know, sitting in my crib by myself.
Yeah.
But I asked your aunt, Brenda. I said, Brenda, you all went to see Endgame, right? She said, oh, yeah. And I said, so what happened at the end when Black Panther told my man to look over his shoulder to his left or whatever he said? She said, it was like the whole theater levitated. You know, and I could feel it in her voice. Even though I wasn't there, at least for that moment, I could feel the electricity in the room, man. And
yeah,
that's what I think you're talking about. It gave a little pride, you know. The whole issue of separation and racism and all the rest of this crap that we're dealing with. Just, we had a common enemy and we had a common bond for a moment.
Yeah.
You know, right.
Yeah. Ain't no sidekicks. Ain't nothing like that. You know, we all in this together.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. Ain't no sidekicks. Ain't no mouse. That's another story too. All right, man. I'm going to get out the way so you can land this airplane, man. Love you, son.
All right, Dad, love you too. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, we're only doing 1 hour shows now, but you know, as I mentioned earlier, I kind of like that. I really didn't realize the impact that this statement had, but you know, providing an opportunity to exercise some critical thinking, maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience. That's something that I really enjoy about doing this show with my dad. And we hope that you all enjoy listening to us as well. So Mondays and Wednesdays, we're live on Blog Talk Radio, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we'll see you this Wednesday, same time, same channel. You all be safe. Stay blessed. Be safe out there. Mask up, et cetera, et cetera. Amen to everybody.
Love you, man.
Love you.
Feeling this way, I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you say to be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain, I say. Made me who I am. I can.